You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then. You're very welcome along to the Talking GA Show with Dave O'Grady for theworldstalking.com. This week, it's a pretty impressive week because we're going to be talking about the hand passing rules. We're also going to be looking at all the club championship games and managers on the move. It's been quite a week in GAA circles. I'm delighted to be joined once again on the show by David in Mead. How's it going, David? Are you well?
Not too bad, Dave. Yeah, good.
Have you recovered from our conversation last week about the demise of Mead club football?
It's nothing new, so I'm well used to it at this stage.
Good man yourself. Graham, you're in Cork again. It's good to have another rebel like you on the show again. Well done, Graham.
Yeah, good evening there. So are you all?
Not too bad, not too bad. And making his debut on the show is, of course, another rebel, Donal in Cork. Donal, are you well?
I'm grand, David. How are you? How are you, lads?
Good. Now, Donal, a point that was made on last week's show was, of course, that UCC had become UCK. There was a lot of putting UCC down in the sense that they had so many Kerry players, and it was a historic thing. It has leaked back years into history of a situation with University College Cork. Would you go along with that?
I would, to be honest, David. I think for your average Cork GA fan, it's just UCC, I don't know, we've no real grasp for them. I certainly don't particularly have any problem with them other than just I don't really have any great affinity with them.
I suppose that's probably going across the board in Cork as it is. Well, I want to start it, lads, by talking about managers that are on the move. And David, if I want to come to you first, and I guess Fermanagh are rejoicing at the moment, as they call it. God has moved to the Erin County, of course. Tyrone legend Peter Canavan is the new manager of the Fermanagh senior footballers. A great coup, really, for Fermanagh, but obviously we haven't really seen Canavan tested. How do you think he's going to do at this role?
Well, it's very hard to say. I mean, I know he was coaching school there and they've had a bit of success, but it's a completely different story to stepping up to inter-county level. Now, you can always kind of look at, say, the likes of Kieran McGeaney, who's from a similar era and had similar success as a player, and he's been a massive success with Kildare so far. They're there, thereabouts every year. Canavan obviously has a different sort of challenge in his hands with Fermanagh, given what happened there last year with players, you know, jumping off the panel and there was an awful lot of unrest. You'd imagine, at the very least, he'll be able to, you know, he'll have the pick of any players. Like, everyone in Fermanagh is probably going to want to play for Peter Canavan and be on board for this, you know. It's just going to depend on, you know, if everyone buys into what he's doing. I'm sure they will. They're still going to, like, it's very hard to see them, you know, making an impression in Ulster or in the Championship as a whole, but I suppose it'll be maybe part of a longer kind of a term project, maybe for 2-3 years, look to build. Like, McGeaney's first year with Kildare wasn't overly impressive. Took a bit of time to get going, and, you know, I can't imagine Fermanagh getting to that level themselves, like, certainly not getting to, you know, All-Ireland semi-finals or anything. But if he can get everybody on board and get the whole county behind them, then, you know, they could, you know, have a bit of a run in Ulster in a year or two. It's hard to see them doing anything this year, though, I would imagine.
Yeah, Graham, they've handed him a 3-year term in charge. They must be, they see this kind of as a long-term thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great, I suppose, job for Peter Canavan to get his teeth into straight away. I mean, he's coming in at a very low base, and that's ideal for him. There's no expectation there. I suppose maybe a promotion in the league, and maybe to get to the latter stages of the Ulster Championship, and maybe have a run through the qualifiers. I suppose Tyrone fans might be a little bit disappointed that maybe he didn't get involved with the minors or the 21s, but, you know, maybe it's a stepping stone for him maybe to get the Tyrone job in the future. But, you know, Fermanagh were very promising there about 8 or 9 years ago. I remember them beating Cork in the Championship in 2004. I think they got there in the semi-final. So, I mean, it's a win-win for him. He's coming in at a low base, so the expectation level is very low.
Yeah, Owen in Kerry, we're delighted to have you on the show this week as well. He's coming into a part of a management team with Kieran Donnelly and Enda Kilpatrick. They worked with Canavan at Erringal, and they'll be working with him for the next 3 seasons. That'll probably be a boost for Canavan and Fermanagh.
It will, yeah. And familiarity there with the management team will be very handy for him. And as the lad said, it's perfect for Canavan. He's going in with Fermanagh there at a low ebb. But he'll be looking at promotion from Division 4, even competing for it really. And with they've downed the first round, the Ulster, and if they got over that, they would be facing Antrim or Monaghan. So they are on the easier side of Ulster. So the league, I think, will be the priority for Canavan at the start.
I think it will, and I'd say Canavan is the kind of guy who's going to try to grow it, start small, think small, and take it easy. He won't be certainly talking his Fermanagh team up. Donal, to bring you in on a point, you know, to achieve success with a side that's really never won an Ulster title, and I think they're lying in Division 4 of the league, it seems like a big ask, but a lot of people are saying, you know, Canavan isn't known as God for nothing.
Yeah, well, like David, it's certainly a no-lose situation, I think, for him, in that if you're going to start off in inter-county management, you know, to come in with a county where there is no great expectation, especially after last season when they lost to London, and no disrespect to anyone in London GAA, but it doesn't come much worse than that, you know. So I think certainly the expectation is low. It's a good base to start from. And if you're an inter-county GAA player and someone like Peter Canavan can't motivate you, then there's something seriously wrong.
Yeah, and Donal, what about the point that was made by the lads earlier that, you know, they thought he would have started with the Tyrone minors or the Tyrone under-21s? He would have started off in his own county and learned the traits there at inter-county level to give him some inter-county experience.
Yeah, well, I suppose the danger always with starting in your own county, especially when, you know, at underage level, Tyrone would have a lot of potential and that kind of thing, that if you don't get off to a good start, that maybe there'd be a feeling it might go against them later on. So maybe I think a lower level inter-county senior team is maybe the ideal way to go.
Yeah, well, I guess you'll have to watch this space on this one. And as the lads were saying, Peter Canavan won't be expecting too much too soon. He'll be taking it step by step. Lads, I want to look at the Leitrim situation. Now, they're on the lookout for a new senior football manager after Mickey Moran was forced to stand down because of health reasons. David, Mickey Moran's term in charge, it was a very difficult job to do, I suppose, being the Leitrim manager, but he did a lot to give them a few championship days out. He's a bit of a loss, but where do Leitrim go from here?
Well, it's very hard to know. I mean, Moran, you know, in fairness to him, he's had, depending on where he's been, I mean, he had a success, obviously, at Mayo, the areas with them getting to the All-Ireland semi-final and beating Dublin that time. That was obviously one of their famous days out, you know. And he always has that. Again, he's kind of one of these maybe underrated sort of managers that gets kind of lesser, so-called lesser counties, like let's say Leitrim, for example, and can bring them on, you know, to the next level. And he obviously had quite a bit of success with them. It's hard to know, like, who they'll get from there, from here on, because, you know, you don't know, you know, what their resources are, you know. I mean, obviously, the whole subject of, like, you know, paying managers is still a bit kind of cloaked in secrecy. But I mean, we don't know, you know, say for example, if Fermanagh are able to kind of provide a nice expense package for Canavan and get him in, what sort of, you know, would Peter Canavan have taken a Leitrim job? I'm not so sure. So it's going to be difficult to see, you know, who they get in. There's plenty of good managers out there. I mean, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine about this recently. There's a kind of a knee-jerk kind of reaction out there among counties to get, you know, to go for the likes of Peter Canavan, a big name from the past. But there's plenty of good coaches out there at club level, and I'm sure there's one or two lads in Leitrim who'd be well capable of coming in. You look at, say, what Jason Ryan's done, who was a low profile sort of a guy, has done in Wexford. So I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of guys out there for them, other than the names that we'd all be aware of. You know, I'd say that they should be able to pick somebody up, whether they can, you know, get back to where they were the last couple of years under Mickey Moran. It's going to be difficult for them, because traditionally, you know, I suppose a team like, you know, Leitrim, they'll have one or two good years, maybe every 20 years, something like that. You mightn't see them again for another 5, 6, 7 years. So it's just a matter of whoever comes in, I suppose, building on what Mickey Moran has done and trying to kind of keep everybody in there and bringing a few lads through. And again, you know, kind of slowly kind of building up the base of players and progressing that way, you know.
Yeah, and I guess for Leitrim fans, whoever does come in, they'll be looking for a pretty good league campaign in order to, and the Leitrim County Board will be looking for, you know, a good league campaign, in the sense that they'll have Carrick on Shannon packed out for their Connacht Championship matches.
Absolutely, and I mean, I was down in Carrick there a number of years ago. Meath played them in the qualifier, and they were lucky to get out of it. They got a leveler right at the end of normal time and got out in extra time by the skin of their teeth. And it's certainly a very tight, kind of compact little ground. And when the atmosphere is, when the crowd is in there and their blood's up, it's a very intimidating place for away teams to go. So yeah, it's kind of like the league has become so important now over the years. Teams, whereas before maybe wouldn't have taken it so seriously. Now it's, you know, every game counts, and you're always looking towards, you know, building for a championship. So they'll certainly be looking to put in a good league campaign, get someone in as soon as possible, get a good kind of bit of training under belts, and then try and hit the ground running when they get into the league campaign, you know.
Yeah, and just a point I want to put to Donal. A lot of people say when talking about the Connacht Championship, is if you get a county together there and you organise them well, anything can really happen in the Connacht Championship. We've seen Sligo when they've got a good run together. They come out and they win Connacht, and the same goes for Roscommon. Is the Connacht Championship open ball game, depending on what team is the best prepared going in that year?
Well, I suppose of the provincial championships, probably after Ulster, maybe it's the most competitive in that the level that teams are at, and they're all kind of able to compete with each other to an extent, although obviously Mayo, Galway, Roscommon would maybe be more successful, but there's always a chance of getting a run in Connacht. You know, especially a lot of teams, you might start in the semi-final, win your semi-final, you're straight into the final. Then, you know, once you win the Connacht Championship, like, it's straight into an All-Ireland quarter-final. So,
yeah,
you know, certainly there's good potential for teams to make a breakthrough there.
Yeah, Owen, would you go along with that point? You know, there's always that Donal was making, there's always the potential there. If you get a good run, anything can happen in the Connacht Championship.
Absolutely, yeah. Dave, and I think the new Leitrim manager, very similar to Canavan, will be going in a low ebb, I think, if they have a decent enough league campaign. And they've London first round the Connacht, so that's going to be a big game over in London, especially with London would be looking for that to be a game that they'd fancy to win after Mayo. Oh, last year. But if they get over Leitrim, they'd have Mayo in a Connacht semi-final. And really, that could be their final, because if Leitrim made a Connacht final, that would be a successful year for them.
I think, yeah, I think a lot of people will agree with you there. Another thing that seems to be sweeping the GAA, lads, is the suggestion that the hand-passing rules should be tweaked. And, you know, Graham, a lot of people have given out about the way Donegal played their football in the summer. And this suggestion that, you know, they should change the rules in regards to the hand pass. What do you make of this? Would that just kill people's tactics? Because we know Gaelic football has just become so tactical in recent years. Would you be in favour of tweaking these rules or what?
Absolutely. I think the hand passing is killing football. I'd like to see a situation where after two hand passes you have to use your foot to kick the ball. I mean, when I was coached playing football, I was always told that the ball travels faster than the man. And I mean, it's ridiculous there, the A to B to C to D. It's possession for the sake of possession. And, you know, we've seen it coming in at all counties. Cork are another side that hold on to the ball and hold on to the ball and hold on to the ball and wait for something to happen. I definitely think it's worth a try in the league. Try and curtail it to two hand passes and then you have to kick it. The only problem with that then is the referees. I mean, it's impossible for a referee to try and keep up with the game and keep up with this. And, you know, if a goal is scored in where we're going back to the three hand passes and the referee doesn't see it, you know, you're going back down the road of maybe they want television evidence and all this kind of carry on. So, you know, something has to be done about it. But, you know, it's just worth having a look at in the league anyway.
Yeah, Owen, Joe Kernan has come out, you know, this week, and he said that there should be no revolution, but the rules do need to be tweaked. He thinks people are a bit harsh because in championship matches, when, say, a contentious incident or a dubious call is made by the referee, there's almost a clamour that goes up to have the rules changed or amended. Do you think this business has come from that and from people being critical of Donegal's way of playing? And of course, Owen, you're a Kerry man. You like your football direct and play the beautiful game, so to speak.
Yeah, Dave, we do, but you have to be realist too. And I agree with Joe Curran. Look, massive changes don't need to be made to the game. I think the hand passing rule, maybe limiting it, would be unbelievably hard to police. And I don't see if if a defender's coming out of defence, makes two hand passes, what's stopping him just kicking the ball 5 yards to the next fella instead of hand passing it? It's not going to encourage 40, 50-yard high balls into full forward. Donegal played their system last year because that was the players they had. I seen Donegal play under 21 football under Jim McGuinness, and they play beautiful football. You'll see a different Donegal this year. I wouldn't be in favour of mad rule changes. I think the game is grand the way it is. A little more help for referees, but look, and big decisions, maybe it's unfair on teams that are training, but it gets people talking, and there's no such thing as bad publicity. Get people to talk about the game, and the odd controversial decision, that helps it too.
Yeah, and David, you know, Owen make the point about, say, two pan passes and then a long kick. Kind of, it sounds a little bit like the way kind of international rules is played, where you're kind of constantly monitoring how many kicks or fists passes that there is. Do you think it would kill the momentum of the game if this was to come about?
I'm very much against this kind of thing coming in, because, as was mentioned, first and foremost, the referee is going to have an absolute nightmare trying to keep track of, you know, how many pan passes have come together consecutively. The issue, as far as I can see, is that, you know, you've got teams that are hand passing the ball over and back across the pitch, as was said there, just to keep, for the sake of keeping possession. But, you know, you look at back, say, of course, one goal that would be very, you know, fond of my memory would be the Kevin Foley goal from 91 against Dublin, when there was, I don't know how many hand passes together, but the ball was moving up the pitch the whole time. There's nothing wrong with hand passing per se. It's just that teams are, like, over and back across the pitch, not going anywhere with it and holding possession. But just the main point I'd make on this is that every sport is developing. The way it develops is that teams come up with tactics. They might work one year, people get wise to them, and then the following year they're not as successful. Like, you look at the way Tyrone bottled up Kerry there a few years ago in the famous kind of landmark game where they just swarmed around him. And Kerry came back the year after that or whatever it was, and you know, they countered it then. They just played a bit more direct and moved the ball quicker. So the nature of any sport is that what teams will come up with a plan. It'll be successful for a period. The rest of the teams will look back and go, right, well, what are they doing here that we can counteract? And then, so next year you'll see teams coming out, and they probably have a better idea of how to play Donegal, because Donegal's game this year was another, you know, step, you know, further than even what Tyrone had been doing back in the day. So I think, you know, this, every time there's any kind of a tactical kind of shift from a team, people are kind of calling for the rules to change. I don't think they should be changed. I think that the game evolves. Teams will come up with ways of counteracting, you know, whatever style of play it is. And that's all part of the, you know, the development of the game. People kind of thinking outside the box, going, right, how do we overcome this? You can't go changing the rules every single time, you know, a team comes up with a new tactic. I don't think, anyway. So I'd be dead against, for those two reasons. First of all, from the referee's point of view, but secondly, just the game evolves. Teams come up with ways of counteracting things, and, you know, that's how it goes. So I wouldn't be in favour of changing the rules at all, no.
Would you go along with that, Donal?
I would, to an extent. I mean, I do think certain changes have to be made. I do agree that maybe it's going to be hard to police it if you put a hard and fast rule about the number of hand passes. Maybe what I would like to see is if teams, after a player has taken the hand pass, or given the hand pass to the player, maybe has to take something like 10 steps before they can hand pass again, or they have to kick, and then that kind of a thing.
But Donal, having said that, does that just not bring about more contentious decisions, a score that shouldn't have been a score, there was too many steps, there was an extra hand pass in there, does that not bring more stress to the referees, and, you know, more, it would put the referees under more pressure?
Well, yeah, I suppose that's a fair enough point. Any rule you bring in with hand passing, you know, it's going to be very hard to put a definite number on limiting hand passes. I certainly wouldn't agree with limiting hand passes in general. What I would like to see, personally, is maybe stopping players from hand passing the ball backwards. I think there's a lot of this kind of defensive hand passing going on. Personally, I think maybe stopping the team from hand passing within their 21-yard line at all. Maybe just that you have to kick the ball from within your 21-yard line, and then you can hand pass forward up the field, that kind of thing. It's going to be hard to police it, but if I can just come in on the Donegal thing.
Yeah.
I just want to say that, like, I certainly hope that Owen is right when he says that Donegal aren't going to play the same way again, because as a football fan, I just thought the way that Donegal played last year, if that's going to...
They got, in fairness though, Donal, they got to the All-Ireland semi-finals playing that way. I know it's a lot of people have criticised it, but does the ends justify the means?
But I mean that's my point, Dave. If that a team can get to an All-Ireland semi-final playing like that, if they were to continue playing that way again and maybe have a good run again, that you'd see more and more teams playing that way. And certainly, if I was from Donegal, I'd say we won an Ulster title for the first time in nearly 20 years. We're on the verge of an All-Ireland final. You know, you could understand, you know, they just want results. But for the rest of us watching it, you know, it's just, I think it's not good for football if teams are encouraged to play that way. And that's why I hope Donegal do play differently this year. And if they don't, then... You know, I think, you know, if they do go on and get a very good run again this year playing that way, I don't think it's good for the game, certainly in the short to medium term.
Yeah, can I just jump in there on that one, actually, David? Just a quick one on the Donegal thing. I mean, I think they got to an All-Ireland semi-final last year, but ultimately, you know, and they won the Ulster, but they didn't, you know, if a team won the All-Ireland playing like that, I think there'd be, you know, a national outcry probably from GAA fans around the country. Okay, they won an Ulster, which is a fairly attritional sort of a championship anyway, so that sort of football is probably suited to you know, to coming out of Ulster and doing well in Ulster. Ultimately, they came up against Dublin, and Dublin just had a bit of extra class, and I personally, anyway, would think that if Donegal continued to play that way, I think that it probably took them as far as it could do last year. And I'd be surprised if they had the same success this year. First and foremost, because teams would be wise to it. And secondly, I just don't think that you can play that sort of, one-dimensional kind of football. They had the chance to beat Dublin last year. If they'd opened up a small bit more with about 50 minutes ago, and they had about 3 points of a lead. So I think ultimately that sort of let football won't bring you the success, and eventually you'll meet someone along the line that's just going to have better footballers than you, and be able to beat you, just as Dublin just did last year, just about, you know.
Yeah. Well, people would argue with that one, David. What about the 2003 final when we had a nice game of football between Armagh and Tyrone? Pat Spillane nearly having a heart attack in the studio. I want to move on, lads, to hurling action. And I want to go to Graham. Now, Napiershig and Croisín, they'll meet in Turles at 2 o'clock on Sunday for the replay of the AIB Munster Club Senior Hurling Championship Final. The clubs drew 14 points to 111. Croisín dominated, really, despite conceding the first half goal and before being kind of clawed back in the second half. Is this going to be a good replay? You know, we watch a lot of these type of games, Graham, and often enough, it's the replays... They're not as good, and they don't have as many people at the venue.
Yeah, yesterday's game was, I suppose, poor enough, really. You had two teams that were in their first final, and both of them were a little bit nervous and a bit tentative, and the pitch was a little bit heavy as well, but that's what you'd expect. I suppose the most scandalous thing about this is that both sides, I think, refused the toss for a venue. So the Munster Council sought a neutral venue, played a match in Turles. And I mean, this day and age, to be forcing people back to Turles again now next Saturday or Sunday, whenever it is on, is crazy. I mean, the price of petrol these days for fans is just very unfair. 3,000 people turned up yesterday, and of the 3,000, then they were charged €20 to get in, which is absolutely crazy. Tony Constantine had a right cut off the Munster Council on the Examiner this morning. You know, so, I mean, it's very unfair, and you have the Munster Club football final on as well next Sunday. Now, I know one isn't going to take from the crowd, but, I mean, it's very fair on fans. I mean, it's a fair old trip from both sides to get to Turles.
In fairness, Graham, could the argument not be said that the Munster Council, there's going to be a €5 reduction on the admission price and a €1 reduction on the price of the match programme? Is that a good move by the Munster Council? Is that going to ease the blow? As you mentioned, it is quite unfair with, you know, petrol prices these days and that, but is that some consolation?
I suppose it is a little bit of a consolation, but €5 isn't going to get you very far at the price of petrol at the moment. And, you know, it's crazy that both teams are playing shadow boxing here, that they refuse to toss for the venue. And it's like one is trying to get up in the other. Maybe it's the fact that the Piercing are reluctant to play in Ennis, that it's a tighter pitch and mightn't suit their style of hurling. And maybe Croisín don't want to go to the Gaelic ground. So, You know, reminiscent a little bit of Cork and Tip in 2004. Tipperary refused the toss, and the Munster, or the qualifier game ended up below Killarney. You know, it's this time of the year, and you know, luckily yesterday would be the fine day. Who knows what the weather could be next weekend? And you know, they got 3,000. They'll be doing very well to get 3,000 again next Sunday. You know.
No, that's fair enough. And I want to put that point to Owen, actually. The match itself, Owen, how do you see this one going? As Graham was saying, neither team like playing. It was a very political in terms of, you know, the toss. They didn't want to play in one place and they didn't want to play in the other place. And the Munster Council had moved this to Turles. How do you actually see this match going? You know, it was a very topsy-turvy first game.
It was, yeah, Dave, and it's probably that the two teams wouldn't be so used to getting to that stage, and there was a lot of shadow boxing, and I really don't think either of them really wanted to take the game with a scruff of the neck. But you'll see a different game the next day, and it's great to see that there was no big clubs either from the Turling strongholds there, like Tip and whatnot have gone. And same in Leinster, no Kilkenny teams. And yeah. I think it was Offaly champions in Leinster, and we're going to have Limerick or Clare champions in Munster. And I think the Carlow champions won the intermediate grade in Leinster, and the London champions are in the semi-final as well in the intermediate. And I think it's a good spread out, but I agree a lot what Graham was saying. €20 was madness to charge in, and bringing them back to Turles, I think maybe the Munster Council should have taken a big step and said, look, you are tossing first, this is what's going to happen, like it or lump it, and move it maybe to a smaller ground. If you're only expecting 3,000 people for it, why is that in Turles? There's surely club pitches around. We've seen a fantastic atmosphere in the Connacht Championship, in the Connacht final, in a small club ground, and the same with a lot of the junior grade and the intermediate grade Munster. They're played in Mallow, and that's a fantastic setup. So why have big empty stadiums when you can have nice tight club grounds with a great atmosphere?
Yeah, a lot of people, Owen, would probably agree with that point. We've seen it was done by the Leinster Council in the Inter-County Football Championship for Wexford. They did a doubleheader with the Hurlers, I think it was, and it was a fantastic atmosphere. I want to briefly talk, and as you said, sorry, Cool Derry, of course, beat Ullert the Balla in the Leinster final. I want to turn our attention to football, lads, and David, the Leinster Senior Football Championship semi-final. St. Bridges will be taking on Port Laois, and a tie will take on Gary Castle of Westmead. Just a quick point on a tie. They've kind of been boosted recently by the unexpected return of their all-star defender, Mick Foley. He wasn't due back from his extended holiday until late last month. He's cut his break short, and he lined out actually full-back for Kildare in a challenge against a Patrician College selection there last week. I guess the return will compensate because they lost fullback Brian Kinahan with a shoulder injury. Looking at the Yatai Gary Castle game, that'll be a bit of an interesting semi-final. I'd imagine it'll be a difficult one to call. Both sides, they're not bad. I mean, Yatai are a pretty good side, and we know what Gary Castle can do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it'll be tough enough. You'd imagine it'd be a tough enough one to call. I mean, it seems like the draw is weighted on the other side with Bridgets and Port Laois being the, you would imagine, looking at the odds, even Bridgets are favourites and Port Laois are second favourites for Leinster. So you'd imagine looking at it that the winners will come from that half of the draw. But I mean, you know, it's kind of at the stage this time of the year, really, when you know, teams are kind of, the ones that are up for it the most. I mean, Bridgets have obviously come on and are, you know, look to be firing in all cylinders, but Gary Castle obviously there would have, you know, the two Dolan boys, and they're still firing away. Yatai, obviously, as you said, having Mick Foley back is a big boost for them. But you'd imagine, like, I'd be fancying Gary Castle for that one just slightly, but it's going to be, you know, because they would have a bit more experience maybe at that level. But it's going to be a tough enough one, I would say, to call. As you say, it's going to be tight enough between them, and it's obviously kind of a bit of a local rivalry, local derby there as well between the two kind of neighbouring counties. But you know, I would say whichever one of them wins, that would be would have their work. You would imagine on paper anyway, would have their work cut out to be. I'd fancy Bridgets in the other one, and you'd imagine that the winner of the Leinster would come from the Bridgets Port Laois game, just from, you know, looking at the records down through the years would be with Bridgets themselves and Dublin clubs in general, and then Port Laois obviously have been very strong down through the years in Leinster as well.
Yeah, and just the point, as you said, you know, you made the point there, David, about Gary Castle. They've had a few defeats in this Leinster Championship. There might be a bit of experience there on their part, which might go against them. But Owen, just on the St. Bridget's Portlaoise match now, obviously St. Bridget's, they defeated Horswood 120-38. Now, everybody's making the point about this Bridget's team that in terms of, you know, overtraining, and they've played 7 games in the last 8 weeks, and a lot of people are saying they look fitter, stronger and more productive with each game they play. So much for burnout for the Dublin champions.
No such thing as burnout, Dave, when you're winning. And you see now with the backdoor teams that have won All-Ireland through the backdoor, when you're winning, there's no burnout. A lot of people are saying this is going to be the Leinster final. Bridgens and Portlaoise have a great record in this competition. It's going to be tough. I think Bridget's will come through. I think Bridget's will go on to win Leinster. I think it'll be a Bridget's versus Bridget semi-final. The Rossies should, I think that'll end the Dubs' participation. But it's going to be a great game. And, well, if Portlaoise win it, I'm looking forward to Cullen Parkinson's Twitter account. It'll go into overdrive.
Yeah, lads, I just want to quickly move you on. Of course, we've seen Cross McGlenn retaining the Ulster club crown with a 2-11-10 point win over 14 men Burren. But just a quick one on the bet of the week this week. I'm going to go to Graham with this one. Graham, we were off to a great start last week. We had with Dowling last week. He did the business for us last week. But this time we have Napier Shig to score the first goal against Crisheen in the replay. It's evens with Paddy Powers. They reckon the Napier Shig backline is underrated. I think they've had 5 clean sheets in a row. Would you put a punt on that one, Graham?
Yeah, difficult to call it. I went for Crisheen last week. I fancied them to win. They're slight outsiders now to win next weekend. I'd avoid it, to be honest. Probably the bet of the weekend probably would be the odds on favourites, Dr. Crokes to beat UCC in the football. That would be my bet, but yeah. you won't get much odds on that. But
no.
I think Dr. Crokes would probably overcome UCC. Maybe if you went for a Dr. Crokes in the Piercing double, that might be the way to go, you know.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens and we'll be discussing that next week. Well, David in Meath, Donal in Cork, Owen in Kerry and Graham in Cork. Listen, thanks a million, lads, for joining us on the programme this evening, and we look forward to chatting to each and every one of you next week.
Thanks, mate.
Good night.
Cheers.
You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then.